the commonest question, business question I get is some form of this question. How do I sell my art without doing social media, which I don't like, and without doing marketing, which I don't enjoy? Well, you don't. So that's that. Welcome to episode 152 of Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations to feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Louise Fletcher.
And me, Alice Sheridan.
And this week's topic has arisen from some things I think we've both been facing about long-term vision and sticking with our long-term vision. And maybe how do we do that when things come up that seem enticing or interesting or something else? So that's going to be our main topic. But first of all, we're just going to catch up on each other's week as normal. So what have you been up to, Alice?
I have been settling back into these paintings in the studio. I had a good few days together on the run with them. And you know when you've done those really first lovely stages and you're like, oh, this is all exciting and this is good and I really like this, and then you go in and you think, right, okay, now what next? You know, what am I going to do? Because there are things here and you know that you've got to kind of get past that into the next stage of it. And I'm not sure it gets any easier. It does get easier because you know what's on the other side of it, but it's still hard. And I think not wanting to kind of settle on things too early is always a big problem when you work this way. But it's exciting then, and every time you leave it, you go back and you see something else. So I went back in yesterday to do a little bit of a review because I didn't think I had that many big ones, and I've got them all together, and I think there's 10 or 12. So there's a lot going on, and I thought, okay, I need a little bit of clarity here, sort them all out. Let's work out how things are going to sit alongside each other, because I think that's also important in a collection of work, that not only is there variation in mood within a painting, perhaps, but paintings that sit together. So that's what I was doing yesterday. But while I was doing that time looking, I just noticed so many things from just what I've done already of different parts of paint coming through that I would never do if I set out to do it that way. So there's this lovely sort of lime green that was hideous in the first round. And you can look at the first couple of stages, a few posts back on Instagram, and people said, oh, this is a fun new direction. I thought, well, it won't stay like that. but there's parts from that stage that are still there, but it's softening. And I like the way that it's settling down. There is this kind of depth to them, but a softness, and I'm quite happy with the way they're going. So it's been a very good studio week.
That's good. And actually, yeah, for once, me too. We usually on opposite ups and downs.
Yeah,
my week, last week and this week, have gone really well in the studio. And what I find interesting is I'm coming to the end of the work for the exhibition, and I'm working on these 10-inch panels, and I've got all these ideas of what I want to do next and this new project I want to work on that will be really meaty and long term and lots of exploration. But I can see that it's beginning in these, like, yes, it's there in these. It wasn't in the first ones in this series, but it's there in these, and so it's going to feed in to the next work really nicely. So it's making it not feel like, oh, I've got to do more of these for the exhibition when I've really got another idea, because it feels like they're transitional pieces and they're leading me. And I'm really enjoying them. And it's a very serendipitous process that I'm working with. That's a good word, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was listening to an interview with another artist this morning, and they were talking about being very thoughtful all the way through. And I was getting that little chink of insecurity you get when you're doing something different than someone you admire is doing, and you think, oh, but I'm doing it wrong then. But then, no, I know what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. And in my case, with all the layering of collage and paint and sanding, you get these amazing textures, like you say, things you could never achieve. But a lot of times you just get junk. And it's the distinguishing. There's a certain moment, there was this one little one that's got finished way before all the others. And I thought, oh, but it can't be finished. But no, it is, because it's got everything I want in it. And that leave it, like, and I have to, just like I say to my dog when he wants to eat poo, leave it, Riley. I'm like, leave it, Louise, put it over there. And you've,
that's not the right analogy.
I've still got nine that they're not right yet, but they're showing glimmers and signs. And then it gets thoughtful in a different way than I'm used to in my old process, because then it's like, okay, I love the way the textures are created in this bit, and it's just that corner that needs something. So what can I place on it that when I sand it back, it's going to give me what I need? And sometimes I get it right and sometimes I get it wrong, because I'm learning. But it's really good fun. And it's just, as I say, I'm not even going to talk about what my new idea is, because it'll dissipate into the air before I've done it. But it's exciting. So I'm really champing at the bit to get in this afternoon and do some more.
I think it's just that sensitivity to your work, isn't it? And actually that's one of the really rewarding parts on a very deep kind of internal level of making art, is that you have to do that. You have to give yourself that quietness to connect with it. Because if you're, and in so many other areas of life, it's racing ahead or doing this or stopping the potatoes boiling over, or, you know, the dog's got to go to the hair, all of those things that have to be done on time or to certain things, or, you know, form filling. When you're making art, you have to be in that space with it to recognize when you capture those moments. Otherwise, if you're not careful, you can blunderbuss through them and you know, lose actually some of the work that you've got and you've created to date. And it's just endlessly rewarding. Oh, well, it's nice that we've both had a good week.
Yeah. So on to our main topic, which you messaged me with this topic and wrote just like a series of sentences, which when I first read them, I was like, what is Alice smoking? Because I don't know what she's talking about. But now I've read them again, I understand what you are saying. So tell us in your own words what this topic is and why you thought it would be good for us to talk about.
All right, this is what I said. Podcast idea. What are you prepared to do? Making decisions which suit you, not getting sucked in long-term vision. That's how we plan. It's like random brain farts that happen. But let me tell you what triggered it. What triggered it a little bit is when I see people and there is a block in front of them for what they want to achieve. And I think we often have these ideas, particularly, you know, at this time of year, oh, I could do this, I could do this thing, you know, goals, whatever, intentions, however precise or loose you want to hold them. The fantasy of it is one thing. And then we come across these blocks, which can be tiny little like anthills of blocks, but in our mind, they're big things. So one time this week, for example, it was somebody who was trying to get a tech piece sorted out, but it involved paying for the next level of Squarespace to allow for integrations. And I recognize this so much, because I remember absolutely feeling this, like, but that's a big thing, I can't commit to that. And still now there are things and decisions that I have to make, you know, for my art and in business, and it feels like a commitment to do it. But you've got no choice. If you want to get to the other side and get closer to what you want, there are going to be times where you have to do it. So while I understand being in that space, and I think sometimes there is definitely a need to be in that space for a while, because the first time you come into it, or you think, oh, but I've got to pay a little bit more for my website, it's new and it's a kind of, you know, friction and it's prickly and you're like, I don't want to go there. And then something happens, I don't know what it is, a penny drops, or you make a decision, you just think, well, I've just got to do it and make it worthwhile. And soon you're in a totally new space, in a totally new zone, and you can't even think why that was something that held you back for a while. it was that kind of scenario really that I wanted to talk about. And I know that you've been through this too, because nobody who's done anything hasn't.
Yes. And I think you'd written something about long-term vision in those notes. Mm. And that's the thing that you've always got to keep in mind, isn't it? It's the long term, like what, and it's the same thing that I keep in mind when I'm saying yes to things and no to things, and not always successfully. So I don't mean to make myself sound like I'm an angel, but I'm trying to keep in mind, does this fit in with my long term goal or is it a distraction from that? And if it's yes, in the case of paying for a new website, then you can say, okay, then that's what I need to get there, as you say. Mm. If it's no, as in someone's asking you to do something for them, which doesn't actually tie in with what you want in the long term, it makes it clear to say no. And I think it's that long-term vision that I see a lot of people not spending enough time focusing on, maybe because they don't feel they're important enough to have a long-term vision. But, you know, we feel we put ourselves down. We think, oh, that sounds very grand. And, you know, but it's so important just to know ultimately what you want, because what's going to lead you there. And I was just thinking about last night, I did a Q&A session in my membership group, and somebody asked the question, how do I use YouTube to sell my art? And I said, you don't really, but you do. So you have a long-term plan. You have to make that a long-term plan. That's not going to happen in 5 minutes. That's going to happen in 2 years, maybe, after 2 years of making regular content and building an audience. And it's that same thing of what's the long-term plan? And then what small steps can you take to get you there? Mm. And it sounds like in this case, we're talking about when people don't want to make the small step, because they haven't thought about where it fits into that long-term plan. Or do you think it's something else?
I think in this case, there's a limit. It's not really, it is scarcity, isn't it? There's a scarcity that we have. I think when we're at the beginning, this is not going to be worth it. This isn't going to pay off, whether this is your time or money on something. But the question that you have to ask yourself is, without doing this, where does that leave me? And so in this situation, it was somebody, you know, going to the kind of basic, like, I don't use Squarespace, so I don't know the levels, but it was the level from the personal one to the first level up, which allows you to link in with other things and have the ability to sell on a basic level.
Yeah.
You want to sell your paintings, you need to do it. Yeah. You know, there's no point in worrying about an extra $12 a month. How many paintings do you have to sell to make that worthwhile? So you've got to go. I suppose the part about this that I find challenging, but also where I understand it, is it's about you backing yourself and backing the decisions that you're making and being committed to it. And like I say, while I think that takes a little bit of time to get to that stage, without doing that, how do you expect anybody else to back you? You've got to be the first person that makes that move and puts yourself in that space that feels difficult, that feels a little bit uncomfortable, that is out of your normal zone of experience, in order to get where you want to go.
And I think this is where having run my own business in the past gave me a head start that some people don't have, because I had to take those risks in the past. I always remember we got a website. So this will be about 17 years ago. We had a website made, and the day it went live, my husband and I were looking at it and he said, right, brilliant, look, it's live. And then I thought, oh God, now how do we get anyone to come to it? Because we hadn't even thought of that bit and we didn't have any contacts. And we rang a friend who just started in a marketing job, and he said, have you heard of this thing called Google AdWords, which is brand new at the time? So I went off and got some ebooks on Google AdWords and learned how to do that. And there was this moment of, oh, but this will cost money. Every time someone clicks on our website, it costs me money, and then they might not buy anything or do anything. And I had to get over that then. But very quickly it became clear, at the time it was so cheap, it was like 5 cents a click, and then a resume cost $500. So it didn't take very long to realize this was massively profitable. And so when I came to now, fast forward, what was it, 15 years or something, to when I began to with my art business, for me, it wasn't nerve-wracking to take those financial jumps. It was how much money have we got that I can spend, because mm-hmm. we didn't have a lot of money. We didn't have a lot of savings. But if I can take as much as I can and spend it, as long as I'm wise about where I spend it, then that will pay back. So I've had massive blocks in other areas, but financially that was not a block for me.
And I think because you've had that experience and that knowledge, where it's difficult, of course, is where we're not reassured of what the outcome is. And that's often what we're doing in art.
It's a this is a huge, you have to be, it's an entrepreneurial mindset, isn't it? And a lot of us don't have that naturally. So it's the risk taking. It's the sense that, now I am not a huge risk taker, because I wouldn't put us at the point where we might have to sell our house. I wouldn't ever, you know, put myself at the point where I couldn't afford to eat. But I would put myself at the point where, wow, if this doesn't work out, I'm going to have to figure out a way to make some money fast, because I'll have spent our savings and we won't have any backup money. I would do that much risk. And I think a lot of people won't do anything close to that, or don't feel comfortable with anything close to that.
Yeah.
But it's, as you say, what do you take the risk on? So we often get asked about, should I do Facebook advertising? And generally the answer is no, because unless you've got a very carefully thought out plan and strategy and you know what you're going to do, how are you going to get people to follow you, and how are you going to engage with them, and then it won't work. So when you take, when you're thinking about which risk to take, like you say, the Squarespace website seems like a no-brainer. But maybe signing up for a different software that's going to allow you to, I don't know, post to social media regularly in a pre-planned way. If you're going to pay that extra $10 or $20 a month, are you really going to use it? And what's your plan for how you're going to use it? And what are you going to do with the engagement that you get? Because you can buy followers. That's really easy. But you can't make them stay. It's like you can buy friends at school if you've got sweets, but once you haven't got any more sweets, if they're not your real friends, they won't stay. So you have to know, okay, I'm gonna do this thing, use this software to get Instagram followers, but then this is what I'm gonna do to keep them and engage them and interest them. And if you don't have a plan for that, don't make the jump.
I think the concern about certain things like that, as you say, is you need to have an understanding of the structure, and things have to be ready for people when they arrive through. So if you're going to do Facebook ads or something, you've got to make sure that everything is ready for what you want them to do, and it's clear, and that that works kind of naturally before you put money into something like Facebook ads. And I just feel that it is, we can't know all of this stuff all at once. You have to learn it a little bit gradually. And I think it's just very tempting to do a lot of these things as shortcuts, or because you see that other people are doing them. And I know that, you know, I felt that, and particularly maybe with other people, not just other people in business, but other artists, you kind of think, well, that's working for them, I should be doing that too, because that would save me time. This is what it often comes down to. Is this a good way for you to gather back some time by spending a little bit of money? But you also have to know yourself. So that whole social media scheduling thing, I've never done, because the idea of sitting down and planning in advance and setting up scheduled things just makes, you know, I can see
that's why I thought of that example, because it's like you've got to be the kind of person who would do that, and I wouldn't. I couldn't.
No, the closest I get to it is having a brain dump of ideas that if I'm stuck, I can go back to and pull some out. Or if there is something that you are working towards, like an event, and you might think, right, well, there's actually 8 things I need to let people know about this. Well, I'm going to space them out a little bit. That's about as planned as it gets for me.
Yeah, me too.
I'm interested though whether that will be something that I will start doing a little bit more this year, and whether it will save time. But I think that's often what it comes down to, is it is the time or the money thing. And for me, I did spend the time learning about a lot of this stuff because there was no alternative. I didn't have the funds to pay for it. And I think understanding it as you go is a really important part. And that maybe takes away some of the risk, doesn't it?
Yeah. I was just thinking, is it often looking for that shortcut. And this is the thing, that there isn't one.
Yeah.
So there isn't a shortcut, because you either learn it yourself, as you say, but even if you pay someone, so like with my Facebook ads, I paid someone.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to learn it, and I just couldn't face it again. I'd done AdWords. I didn't want to learn Facebook ads, and it seemed so complicated. But I then spent the time so I'm paying her so I don't have to learn that. Now I'm churning out content. At that point, I was writing 2 blog posts a week, doing occasional videos at that point, always on Instagram, just making stuff, doing this podcast, so that when people came to the website from the thing they found, there was more stuff for them. And that was a lot of work. So not only was I risking the little bit of savings we had, I was risking all the time as well. Mm. I could have been, working at Tesco's to make enough money to pay for what I was doing. I was risking the time, but it's that knowledge I'd had in the past that this works. If you get the followers and you give them something good for free, it turns into this. So I sound like I'm saying, look how great I am. And it's not that. I'm saying that I had that knowledge already, so I could bring it in and use it here. I totally understand why it's scary for people, but I'm quite the bad news bear, really, because I'm always saying, it's not like, you don't go on YouTube and start selling paintings. You go on YouTube and start giving stuff away for free all the time. That's what you do. And eventually people come to love that and count on that. And then they start to love the paintings you're showing them. And then somebody emails you and says, oh, what about that painting? And it's like a snowball going down a hill, or it was for me. The first few years of showing my artwork on social media, other people were saying, oh, I sell loads on Instagram. And I was like, I don't. Nobody gets in touch with me. I don't understand. And then it started to happen, and then it snowballed.
Mm.
And now at the moment, touch wood, I can't make enough. You know, that could shift in an instant. But it took years for that to happen. So you've got to be... So now I know, if I were to go into, start making woodwork things, that wouldn't happen. But if I was, then it would take years before I'd get my first inquiry. And I know that now.
Yeah.
And I'd be okay with it. But I know it's scary for people to think, oh, you want me to spend 2 years making videos on YouTube before things take off. And I know artists, by the way, who it's been much quicker for.
Yes.
So certain types of work, you know, just appeal a lot more, and they're more unique and unusual, and that works. Some people are much more successful more quickly. So it's not always that long, but it is always a lot of work.
It is always a lot of work. And I think that's why it's important to make sure that you're balancing up what you're prepared to put into something for what you want the outcome to be, with an understanding that it's not necessarily always guaranteed, and it's certainly not a straight line.
Yes.
And
good point.
There was a discussion I was part of the other day. I think it might have been in the Kajabi group that my membership is hosted on, and they were talking about pixels and tracking and things like that, which I don't really do a huge amount of. But even these people were saying, it's almost impossible to tell. You know, you cannot tell where somebody comes. You can tell possibly the last point, but you don't know. Like, so now I don't know, is somebody buying a painting from me now because of Open Studio, because they've seen it on Instagram, because they've seen something on Pinterest, because I've sent an email, or is it because I've done all of those things at some point and it's just the last one that happens to, you know, trigger them or hit home or be the right thing at the right time. There is no way of identifying. And I think we want there to be a specific, clear answer to things, and there isn't. So it's very difficult to say, do you have to do all of the things? No, you don't. You don't have to do a YouTube channel if you don't want to. There are certain things that are essential. Have your own space on the internet that you own, that is your home, that you put your stuff, that's not reliant on social media. So some of it is a no-brainer. You've got to do it, and you've got to want to do it enough so that you're prepared to keep pushing through those difficult points to give you what you want. If you don't want any of it, that's fine.
Yeah.
If you want to create art, enjoy it, just show it locally, have a group of artists that you work with, perfect. And I think, I can't remember if you wrote that note or I wrote, they're not getting sucked in. That's really important here too. But knowing what you do like, so what will you sit slightly obsessively and do? Like, what will you just keep going at because you enjoy it? That's your clue to what you should be spending your time in.
That's that not getting sucked in. I want to bring that up as well, because the other side of this is the things that come up that suck you in. So it right. might be creating a YouTube channel when that's not really what you want to do.
Reels.
Not bothering with them at all. I'm so annoyed that when I go through my feed now, it's just bombarded with music and movement when I just want to see pictures. But that's me being old-fashioned. Yeah, but getting sucked into that kind of thing, or things other people ask you to do, things other people involve you in and say, when you start to get a little bit known, even locally, perhaps you get known locally and then you're asked, would you be the treasurer of the local arts group, or would you do the social media? I did that for a while for our local arts group. And would you do the marketing for this? And would you organize open studios? Because if you show any kind of keenness or willingness in any voluntary organization, people will say, oh, here, have this, until you're overwhelmed. So it's either getting sucked in because other people ask you, or getting sucked in because of your own belief about what you should be doing based on what you see other people doing. Those can be massive energy and time sucks away from what you really want to be doing. And this last year and a half, it's the first time I've started to say no, be really discerning about the things I want to give my time to. In the past, and I don't think there's anything wrong with this really, I was just eager to be asked and keen to, I'll do that. Thank you for asking me. But some of the things I said yes to took an awful lot of time and energy. And were they really, they might have paid back in some way or another, but they weren't part of my long-term plan. So now I want to be more careful and protective of my time, because we've talked about this, but we want the time to paint. And if I'm teaching this class for this person and doing this interview and doing this and that, I haven't got time to do my own stuff.
Yeah, I think that's a slightly trickier one, because in my experience, the things that that I've been involved in helping with our open studios and being involved in other people's courses or contributing to them for free at the time. All of those things helped me learn along the way and get a little bit perhaps closer to the stage that I'm at now in terms of what I do want to do, but also my level of understanding, like, you know, what it takes to put together a group of work or the website for open studios or those kind of things. So I think there is a time and a place for that kind of involvement, for definite.
I think so too. I'll give you an example of something I've said no to recently, to give something I would have said yes to back then. And I think you're right, they do bend. It does benefit. But I was asked to be to teach a class on one of those free things, and I've done that before and enjoyed it. But the format for it was to do it live over, I think, Skype or something, like with the instructor asking you questions and you demoing live.
Yeah.
And originally I was like, it's quite a big thing and a lot of people watch it. And I thought, oh yeah, okay, I'll say yes. And then I instantly thought I shouldn't have sent that email. Oh no, then she wrote back with how it worked. And then I went, oh no, no, no. I thought we were going to pre-record a little class. And I wrote back and said, I'm really sorry, but actually no. And the reasons why no was, A, then I've got to work out, I don't actually know how to record live on those things. I've never done that. So now I've got to work that out. Also, the way I work, what I do in a live thing might be absolutely rubbish because it takes, my process just goes where it goes. And then I've got somebody asking me questions. And so it was a great opportunity to get in front of lots and lots of people who won't have heard of me and might take my course, but I don't want to do it because it's taking up too much mental energy. And it's the lessons from the past that make me know I don't want to do that. Another person asked me to be interviewed in their membership, and that felt easy. It's a Zoom call. It'll take an hour. I'll do that because it fits in with my longer term goal without making me feel stressed out. So that's all I mean about starting to be discerning, is just in the past, I would have gone like a little eager Labrador puppy. Yes. Okay. Yes. I'll do whatever you want. And I am a bit of a people pleaser, and I think a lot of us are. And it's just stopping and thinking, is that what I actually want?
Yeah, so there's two different things here, isn't there? There's being sure that you're on the right direction and not getting pulled along with things that other people ask of you. But there's also this stage of, where are you holding yourself back because you're not prepared to do what it takes to do what you need to do to get where you want? And they're possibly two different things that's worth sitting down and reviewing at the same time. You know, if you're feeling like you don't have enough time, what are the things at the moment that are sucking up your time that you're involved with that you could perhaps gently let go? Or my question more is, what are the things at the moment that you're not prepared to do, but you know need to get done? And you've either got to put your big girl pants on and get on with it and do it yourself, or you've got to find someone else to help you and do it for you, because otherwise you'll stay where you are. But I just want to say on that, that it's not, that's not said in a kind of you're pathetic if you don't do it kind of thing, because I remember exactly. And what happens is, those steps that you take towards the beginning that are actually fairly small when you look back on them, at the time feel huge. They feel like massive, great big commitments that you're making and huge obstacles that you're overcoming, or like tech things that you've got to get your head around. But in time, they get so much easier and you change and you grow and you can handle all of those things.
And they pay off. Do you know what I'm just remembering as you speak? I'm remembering where I got that feeling. So I didn't get it on the ads or any of that. I was fine with that. I got that feeling when I invested in a couple of courses, because I know the feeling you're describing, because I couldn't see the payoff from doing that. And they were quite expensive and money was tight. And so that investment felt like jumping off one of those bungee things, only without the cord. Mm. And as it turns out, the payoff from the learning that I got from that was huge.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that. And so I can't imagine that it feels the same on the financial risk taking on upgrading your website if money's tight and if you've not done that kind of thing before, but it's a leap of faith, and that thing, leap in the net, will appear. It is true.
Yeah. I mean, I have two things that I do with that. Whenever I invest in anything that's like that or a big thing, I make sure that I am prepared to do what it takes to make sure that it isn't a wasted investment, that I'm going to do it. Am I ready for this? Do I want to do this? Am I going to put the time in for it? Fuck yeah, let's go and do it then. And, you know, there are a couple of big things that I've done, and every single time I've been like, right, I'm going to do this, and this is going to make me do X, Y, and Z. And then I'm with it on the outcome for it. But the other thing is, I just find it fascinating how we, and I include me in this sometimes, we can spend large chunks of money quite easily and happily because it's something maybe that we want, and we don't spend smaller little bits of money on things because that feels like a bigger block. And I've done that too. I've been like, oh, I don't know about upgrading this thing that's going to cost me an extra $20 a month or whatever. But then I'll go on a painting course for a week and spend 600 quid on it.
Yeah.
Whereas actually over the course, what might do me better over the course of the year is a $20 a month that's actually going to save me 3 hours a week painting time or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's just funny. We just have such a funny relationship to this whole question of what are you prepared to do, whether it is money or whether it is time or effort.
I think the other thing I just want to mention before we wrap this up is this, the time and money investment. I often see an objection with artists to investing time in social media or some form of promotion of themselves. So the commonest question, business question I get is some form of this question: how do I sell my art without doing social media, which I don't like, and without doing marketing, which I don't enjoy? Well, you don't. So that's that. And you put it on your walls or you give it to your friends. So what are you prepared to do sometimes means finding the least horrible thing out of those options. What can you, like Alice said, you don't have to do a YouTube channel, you don't have to do Facebook and Instagram and TikTok and whatever, but if you want people to find you, you're going to need to do at least one of them really well.
Yeah. So
pick the one that feels the least horrible to you. It might be starting a podcast with your friend because you like chatting. It might be Instagram because you like writing. But whatever it is, it's got to be something. Then learn all about it. Put time into it, invest time into it, and make sure you're doing it as best you possibly can, because that you have to do that if you want to sell your art. Otherwise, you have to have a serious conversation with yourself and say, well, then that's not going to be what I do, because it is running a business at the end of the day, and you have to be willing to do that. Or go find an agent and a high-end gallery that will do all that for you. That is possible. Mm. I don't know how, I can't help with that, but that is possible.
Yeah, and it costs in different ways. That's the other thing, that costs in different ways too. But I last week we were talking about going bigger, and the same thing also applies. I think people, what are you prepared to do? Are you prepared to put yourself in that space where you're confronted with a large canvas and you've got to invest in the amount of paint that you need for it? Or are you still in the space where you're happy painting at a smaller scale? But don't try to bridge the gap with where you are now and where you want to be. At some point, you've got to take that jump.
So, Alice, what's inspired you this week?
Well, I'm not sure it's inspired, really. On my personal Facebook, I put a Zumba, what the effing hell? How are you supposed to know what you're doing in it? Because I have tried 2 Zumba classes this week. I've also been on 2 runs. I'm also not drinking a lot of alcohol, just on 1 glass Fridays and Saturdays, and trying to just kind of lose a bit of weight around the middle. And it's not flip, well, it is shifting a little bit, but the scales go up and down, and I've not been one for weighing myself, really. And it's just annoying. It goes up and down. I think I'm doing all this work and it's not annoying. But one thing, my jeans are a little bit more comfy and a little bit less bulgy in the middle, but the scales don't say that. So what I want to recommend is, if anybody else is vaguely interested, I found an app called Happy Scale, which will even out the lumps and bumps, not physically. It won't physically get rid of your tummy lump. But when you have the days where your weight goes up and down a little bit and up and down a little bit, which can be a little bit depressing, it gives an average so that you can see whether you're gradually losing or gradually increasing. But you know what? I'm so determined this time to absolutely stick with it. But it is a very good example of investing a lot of effing time in exercise and hoping for an outcome at the end. I will report back at the end of February, but at the moment I'm not impressed. I feel like I'm working really hard.
Welcome to our world, Alice. It is just funny that thin people, my husband is the same way because he's never gained weight. I remember when he put a bit of weight on and he went, oh, I'm going to eat more sensibly. So then he started having like all this pasta and bread. And I was like, that's not healthy. That's fattening. What is it? I was like, how can you not know this? How can you not know how many calories in a biscuit? I know how many calories in a biscuit. So yeah, welcome to our world of learning what it's like.
It's not fair, is it? Like my husband can polish off half a pack of biscuits
and not put any weight on. Mm-mm. I know, it's so annoying. And men often, if they do put a bit of weight on, they go, oh, I'll stop having half a packet of biscuits a day for a few weeks, and then it all goes, and then yeah, they're back to where they were. Anyway,
yeah,
but Scale is the app to look for.
Sorry, I never thought in a million years I would ever recommend. But I, like I say, I do quite like the fact. What I like about it is, A, it's free. Because I haven't invested in the bit that shows you the long-term forecast.
Of course. How much are you willing to do, Alice?
Not that much. But I like what I like about the app is that it breaks things down. So like you have your goal and it says, so there's this dotted line of like 10 little markers along it. And it's like, well done, you have reached marker one. And actually, since I reached marker one, everything seems to have gone backwards. So I don't know quite what happens about that. But it's of its type, it's the best one that I had a go. So I'm just saving you a little bit of time on that. So, yeah. What about yours?
Mine is art related this week for a change. Mine is a book by Will Gompertz, Gomperz, who writes for The Guardian, and I like him as a writer. But he's written in a book, and I don't think it's new. It's called What Are You Looking At? 150 Years of Modern Art in the Blink of an Eye. And it's a very entertainingly written story of contemporary art. And I am just interested in going back and refreshing my knowledge, expanding my knowledge of the ideas behind art and particularly contemporary art. And it's a nice introductory way of reminding me. I'm terrible at remembering what came before what and what influenced what. I'm terrible at that in life as well. Like, did the Romans come before the Vikings? I can't remember. So in this is just telling you exactly how one thing led into another, and it's written in a really entertaining way. He starts at 1917 with the fountain, the urinal. That's where he starts.
Okay, yeah.
Then he goes backwards. Then he goes backwards from there and goes backwards to the Impressionists. And then he goes on from there. Anyway, very entertaining, well-written, fun to read. Nice little stories in there of things I didn't know had happened.
So this is a kind of paperback type book. Hold it up for me so I can see.
Yeah,
not a big picture book.
No.
Okay, got it.
One of those with just a few pictures. So the only slightly annoying thing is sometimes he's talking about a painting that changed the course of art and you have to go look it up because it's not in the few pictures that are chosen to be in here.
It's quite a chunky one though, isn't it? How many pages is that? 200?
400 pages.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a good old read.
Yeah, it's good. I'm really enjoying it. And it's just reminding me of, and it's telling me the things I want to dip more into and learn more about. I didn't know about Rousseau, just that he was absolutely rubbish. And he was just, his paintings were rubbish. He had no education. He was a tax man, I think. And he just kind of got into the art scene because Picasso liked him. And they even had a party where they kind of made fun of him. Like they made him the guest of honor, the artist guest of honor, and he sat on a throne. But really they were kind of mocking the the innocent rubbishness of his paintings. And but Picasso was quite a fan, and he bought a few of them, and they all loved him because he must have been a lovely person. And he did actually innocently step into being an influential figure in that art movement. But I just found it fascinating that you could just, and he was so full of self-confidence that he didn't question his own, the fact that he had no real skills compared to the other painters. He just didn't care. And he was fully convinced that he'd be an influential artist from the very moment he picked up his paintbrush. See, I wonder if there'd ever be a woman that would be so full of self-confidence when they didn't know what they were doing. Anyway, it's interesting.
Yeah, I don't think it's that. I just wonder how much of that stuff, you know, how much social media kind of crushes that.
Yeah.
Because we're not doing it in real life and getting together and having silly things and putting people on thrones, which sounds like a laugh, quite frankly.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
When, I've got a question for you. When do you find, when is your reading time? Are you good at finding reading time during the day? That's kind of, talking of long-term goals, that's what I'd like to do.
It's little bits. I am reading this in like two pages at a time. So it's, I'm waiting for the kettle to boil, read a few pages. You know, I went in the bath and read some in the bath the other day. I tend not to read before bed because I fall asleep. And sometimes when I wake up, I'll read a few pages
before you get up in the morning. That's nice.
Yeah. So it's really in little bits. And that's why it takes me so long. I used to devour books. I used to read nonstop all the time. And I find now, I don't know if it's social media or age, but my attention span is like that of a gnat. So I can do a few pages and then I'm right, what's next? Can't scroll a book.
You can't scroll a book, no. Oh, talking of which, I just want to say thank you very much for Joanna, who, when I was having a little grumble about Kindle, she messaged me to say you can get the book cover on Kindle. You go into the settings and you check your device settings, and then it says show cover. After all these years, I never knew that. So thank you so much for that, because now I've got to go and find my Kindle and get it charged up. But, you know, that's a deal changer for me.
So if you're interested in either of our recommendations, you can find the links in the show notes, as always. So if you don't know what that is, wherever you're listening, if you scroll down, so if you're listening on your iPhone, just scroll down below the little play thing, you'll find show notes there, same on Spotify or anywhere else. And those are just our notes about what we talked about. But we also always include links to anything we've mentioned, so you don't have to go hunting for it. And in the same show notes, you will also find a link to a free workshop, the free Art to Life workshop. We talked about that last week with our guest, Nicholas Wilton, but there's still time to sign up. It starts on February 14th. Don't miss this workshop. It's great fun. If you didn't hear that conversation with Nicholas last week, do go back and listen, because it's really inspiring. So check out that episode. And if you haven't already signed up for the workshop, you can find the link to do so in the show notes. So that's it from us this week, everybody. Have a great week, and we will be back next week as usual. Bye.
See you. Bye-bye. I couldn't find it last time where I'd put the recording. Looking over there. Honestly, my brain these days. Oh, I know. See? Comes back.
It does.
And I know that you've been through this too, because nobody who's done anything hasn't.
Yeah.
Well, at least we've got outtakes this week.
I choked myself. I was about to speak and somehow saliva went back down my throat and I choked instead of speaking.
At some point, you've got to take that lump, that jump. Edit.
You got to take that lump.
You got to have lumps. You got to have lumps too. I'm going to talk about lumps in What's Inspired.
that's good, right? I think we can leave it there. Okay.